We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. This is episode number 417. Today on the show is Chad Jennings of The Athletic Boston. We're previewing the Boston Red Sox. We talk about the insane last half year in Red Sox land. From Dave Dombrowski firing, to their involvement in the cheating scandal, to the Alex Cora firing and fallout, the hiring of interim manager, and then the Mookie Betts David Price trade. It's been craziness in Red Sox land, all leading up to the fact that we just got breaking news on Thursday that Chris Sale will have Tommy John surgery. Chad and I were actually supposed to do this podcast Thursday morning. Had we done so, we would not have had that Chris Sale news. We had to reschedule to Friday morning, so it actually turned out working out well. And if you haven't already done so, go check out our previous episodes talking about other AL East teams. Number 413, we previewed the Orioles. Number 414 was the Blue Jays. Number 418, which will come out tomorrow, will be the Rays. And then number 415, which was released on Friday, I talked about the history of Major League Baseball shortened seasons. That was a little bit different of a show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you guys have enjoyed all the new shows that Scott and I have been pumping out during this very, very weird time in life. All right, guys, let's get to the episode with Chad. Happy to bring on to the podcast now Chad Jennings of The Athletic in Boston. He covers the Red Sox, and he's a friend of the show. He's been on the last few years to preview the Red Sox. Although this year, it's quite different with the baseball shutdown. Chad, how's it going?
Boy, and that's a question, huh? I have no idea how to answer that. It's going okay. It's going fine, all things considered.
Yeah, and there's obviously bigger issues in the world than when are we going to have baseball again. I'm so sick of saying that caveat, but as far as we're concerned, we love baseball. You cover baseball professionally. I cover it in sort of a hobby side sort of thing. It's a distraction for all of us, and we all just want that back. We all just want the entertainment back.
Well, I write that a lot, you know, a caveat of that we recognize none of this matters, but I don't know. I mean, you know, life is not strictly the life and death stuff. I mean, it's particularly enjoyable because we have stuff like baseball that we like to follow. It's, you know, I don't really, you know, apologize for still writing about and thinking about what's going on with baseball. It still matters. It doesn't matter in the same way that, you know, a virus matters and that health concerns matter and all that stuff. But, you know, I think it's still a worthwhile thing.
You must be good at ignoring your Twitter mentions.
Oh, I'm very good at that. I'm like at least a 75 grade, 70 grade, 80, maybe even 80 grade Twitter mentions ignore. Yeah.
Nice. Well, it's not only been an interesting couple of weeks for the baseball world, but it's been quite the off season for the Red Sox. So I will start with the cheating scandal involvement, because that came first as far as like the chronological order of things. So what is the latest? We're still waiting on a suspension for the Red Sox. Obviously the fallout from Alex Cora being let go by the Red Sox. So what was it like the first week of spring training where there was no more Alex Cora, who is beloved in Boston? He won them he led them to a World Series. You've got Ron Renicki, who I believe wasn't even named manager until after the official start of spring training, right?
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah. The second day I guess it was technically the day, I think they named him manager the day that pitchers and catchers took their physicals. So like the day before the first official workout, but it's kind of like, you know, once everybody was people down there, they were going through workouts and everything. And then now we're, you know, Ron's officially sort of running the show.
As interim manager, not even, does he still have the title?
Yeah.
Interim manager? Yeah. So it's, what was that first week like with all that stuff going on?
It was definitely weird. I mean, you could feel it, you know, in the clubhouse around the team. Just so much has happened, you know. I mean, it's a shakeup, you know. It goes back, you start with even before the investigation stuff, but you know, you go back to the end of last season when they fired Dave Dombrowski and hired Heim Bloom. So it's kind of like all this stuff is new, and the Cora thing was weird because when the report on the Astros came out, and then literally as soon as Jim Crane fired AJ Hinch, I started writing Alex Cora fired story, because it just was inevitable. I was writing it then, and I think it was the next day that they announced it, and so we had a story ready to go, because you just knew, like, there was not really a way around this. You couldn't see a path forward for him to manage the team going forward. But it was strange because they really liked Alex here, and so there was no sense of like, I didn't feel like there was a sense of like anger at him. It was just kind of, this thing happened and we kind of have to respond to it the way we did. So the losing of Alex felt more like, I think kind of felt like a real blow to them, you know, that it was just a disappointment. I think that they excused what happened in Houston, but my feeling is that I would bet that most of the guys, and I brought this up with a lot of people in baseball and seems to be in agreement that, the guys who were involved with the Houston thing, my guess is they all look at it now and go like, wow, that really got out of hand. You know what I mean? I think that in stepping back from it now, when they see it the way we're all seeing it, when you just get presented, boom, here's what it was. And you're like, what the hell? Like, you were doing that? And I would guess that they can see the same thing. What I'm curious about with the investigation on the Red Sox is what the Red Sox are accused of doing. To me, the longer the investigation goes on, the more likely it is that the league is finding that it was pretty widespread to have some version of video rooms being used to steal signs.
I think that's definite.
A Red Sox writer maybe seems like they're making an excuse for them or anything, but But I just don't think that's the case. I mean, you look around the league, man, look at how often people were using different signs with no one on base. I mean, this was not an isolated thing. I think the Astros took it too far. And so what I'm curious to see is there seems a universal agreement around the league that the Astros overdid it. They crossed the line. It's, to me, the Red Sox report is going to be interesting to see what does the league make of something that was clearly illegal, but that maybe was far more widespread and common. You know, do you come down hard on that team, and maybe they will. I mean, certainly what they're accused of doing anyway, broke rules. But if you do, I think you've got to be ready to punish other teams as reports come out on them. You know what I mean? Like you risk it coming out in drips and drabs, you know, over the next year or two.
And that's baseball's worst
nightmare. I'm interested to see. Oh, I think so. And this is also to me, when these guys, when it all came out about the Astros, so many players who were, you know, fire and mad, just, you know, I mean, you've read all the quotes and heard the sound bites. I mean, guys were pissed.
Yeah.
But not one of them was surprised. You know, this was all like, we've heard about this. I mean, you hear the A's say that they told the league in 18 what they knew and the league did nothing.
Yeah, Lucroy's comments were very telling.
Oh, man. If the longer you let this thing go on, the more it became like pine tar on a pitcher's fingers. You know, yes, illegal, but something that the league is just going to let happen and that everybody's kind of on board with. You know what I mean? Just don't overdo it. And it's allowed to continue. So to me, I think that's also one of the things that I think the league has to deal with is you kind of let this go on. You know, everyone knew something was happening. And if you weren't stopping it, then it was allowed to continue and allowed to build. And then it gets out of hand to the point that you've got, you know, what was happening with the Astros. So that's what I'm most curious about when the report comes out is how hard do they come down on a team that was doing something that was, or at least accused of doing something that was illegal, but also widespread.
Right.
I think that's a tricky thing to punish.
I agree with you. I think most teams were probably fudging the rules a bit, using the replay room in ways they shouldn't have. The Yankees name came up multiple times in all of the different athletic articles. I equated it to steroids in the mid-90s, where guys were doing something wrong. They were using HGH, and then it got out of hand, and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa each broke the home run record. So that's what the Astros did with the trash cans and everything that they did. They broke the home run record. So you had to really... You had to notice it. You had no choice but to notice it.
Right. Yeah, it just became too, you know, too over the top at this point.
So I have seen, because they only named Renicky interim manager, and like you said, they loved Alex Cora in Boston. I've heard some rumors that they're just waiting for the punishment to come down. The Red Sox ownership is going to sort of bide their time and then rehire Alex Cora at some point in the future. Do you have any information or any opinion on that?
I mean, I don't think that is the plan right now, because I don't. Part of it is I think they can feel fairly certain that Renicky will not be punished, right? Like, I mean, you even saw that with the Astros, when the league's punishment was strictly the two guys that they deemed to be in charge. It was who they punished were the manager and the general manager, the league. So if that's the case, even if they find something about the Red Sox, I think they can feel fairly certain that Renicky will not face an immediate suspension. But I don't think they can feel the same way about Alex. You know, I mean, the way that the league went out of its way in the report on the Astros, the league went out of its way to make clear that Cora was a massive part of that. So if in a report you say Hinch and Lunau, we don't believe were sort of the orchestrators of this scheme, but they're each suspended for a year, what are you going to do to the guy who you have written did orchestrate the scheme and then also was the manager of a team that you're now potentially going to also punish? I don't know what kind of punishment Cora is facing here, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if it's more significant than the year-long suspension that that Hinch and Luhnow got. And if that's the case, I just don't see how the Red Sox could bring him back anytime in the near future.
Yeah, well, I think that it's going to be hard for Luhnow to get back into a GM position, but I could see AJ Hinch being working his way back up to being a manager of a baseball team. And the same goes for Cora, especially because players really took to Cora. They loved Alex Cora. And that's going to go a long way.
I agree with you. I don't think that, I mean, as long as he doesn't get something like a lifetime ban or something, which I wouldn't necessarily expect, but I wouldn't be surprised if Cora is managing a major league team at some point again. I'm just saying, I don't think that in the immediate future, with everything that's going to come out with this and whatever else, I don't think the Red Sox can position themselves to say like where their plan is to just have Renicky hold down the fort for a few months and then bring back Alex. I just don't think that's where the Red Sox are heading. I think that I'm with you that I could still see Cora at some point being a manager again, especially if this report is kind of a league-wide reckoning of, okay, the whole league was kind of letting this thing go a little too far with using video rooms, then I think we would look at it differently. But I don't think that's sort of part of the immediate plan for the Red Sox to just sort of in the short term hold down the fort and then bring Alex back as quickly as possible.
And you also mentioned Dombrowski being fired. The Red Sox really underachieved in 2019 after having pretty much a perfect 2018 season. Chaim Bloom was brought in. So he's chief baseball officer. That's, but he's, it's GM, right?
Well, they have a GM.
Okay.
Brian O'Halloran was promoted to general manager. But it's weird. I mean, it's just all this, like, you know, this is, we've seen this all around. I mean, that was Dombrowski's title, was not general manager. Dombrowski was the president of baseball operations, but he was functionally the general manager. Mm-hmm. So it's a strange thing. You know, it's funny too that sometimes the Red Sox will do conference calls where they'll have chief baseball officer Chaim Bloom and general manager Brian O'Halloran on the same call, and you can tell all of us are like, I mean, I like Brian a lot, but like, I don't know, like, what would I add? He's clearly the number two guy here. Like, he has the GM title, but it's every question goes to Chaim. He's the guy at the head of baseball ops.
It's like Dwight Schrute in The Office. He's the assistant to the general manager.
Correct. Yeah. It's sort of just another guy, but with a different title.
But Dombrowski's fired. And he's fired for basically doing exactly what he was hired to do, which is sign a lot of talented players, win a World Series, and empty your farm system. That's what Dave Dombrowski does. And that's exactly what he did. And then they fired him for it. It's very bizarre.
And did it really well. I mean, he did exactly what they wanted to do. He gave them a World Series championship. I do wonder if the team owner, John Henry, and their chairman, Tom Warner, both said when they fired Dave, they mentioned that the previous offseason, so after 18 heading into 19, that they said they already knew that a goal would be to get below the luxury tax threshold in 2020. And so I do wonder a little bit if they said, too, that they disagreed at the time with some of the moves that Dombrowski made in the winter after the World Series, when he brought back Eovaldi, when he, you know, gave a couple of extensions to Sale and Bogarts, that they disagreed with. So they didn't get into specifics about which ones they disagreed with, but they said they had some disagreements on exactly which moves to make, and they trusted him. I do wonder if they kind of gave Dombrowski the benefit of the doubt, but told him, look, here's kind of where we want to go. If you think that's the way to do it, we'll trust you, but we want to get to here, and we're letting you set the path. And if at that point, that's when it became like, okay, you know, we kind of gave you a chance to do this your way to get us where we want to be financially. And if he couldn't do that, then they moved on. But I mean, ultimately you're right. I mean, they, frankly, before Dombrowski, they had Ben Cherington, who runs things with sort of a very similar mindset to the way Chaim Bloom does. So, you know, they went from a guy who did it that way to sort of build from within. They fired him. They brought in a guy who builds from the outside. They won that way. Then they fired him and they brought in a guy to build from the inside again. You know, it's just a pattern that they're in right now.
Right. And the whole getting under the luxury tax, which I don't necessarily disagree with, because the Yankees even did it. And if the Yankees if the Yankees are going to do it, then any team in my opinion should do this.
Completely. I think there is a lot of backlash toward the Red Sox about that they're getting cheap and that they're not willing to spend and it's all about money. I mean, this is every franchise that has gone over the luxury tax has gotten below it. It's the way the rules are drawn up. It's the most logical way to do it. Stay above the luxury tax for 2 or 3 years and then get below it. It is right there in the CBA. It is designed for teams to do this. I don't think that anyone can be surprised that this is happening. It's the most logical way to go about it.
But here's where I can see why fans are pissed off, because it directly led to trading Mookie Betts.
Totally. No, I understand. The idea of being frustrated by it and angry about it makes sense. I continue to contend the Red Sox should have made the Betts trade. They should have traded Mookie Betts for Jeter Downs and Alex Verdugo with a handshake agreement that in a week we're going to trade you David Price for Connor Wong. Just don't make it so obvious that Mookie Betts was the salary dump. You know what I mean?
Everyone will see through that plan.
Yeah, you'd think so. I just thought that made it look worse when the optics of it, when Mookie Betts was used partially to dump David Price's contract. That just made it more frustrating. You know, some of it was not, I don't think it was purely about the luxury tax. I mean, it was also about the recognition that Mookie Betts was hell bent on becoming a free agent.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question to you. If you think the Red Sox could have re-signed him.
I did think that, but have since had conversations that make me think, no, I don't think that's the plan.
Is that a team decision or a player decision where Mookie did not want to be in Boston?
No, I think it's a team decision. I don't think Mookie cares that much.
He just wants to get paid.
I think so. And you know, look, he's a Nashville guy. Like his house, he's building a house in Nashville. His family is in Nashville. He loves He's not planning to. He's not setting roots somewhere, right? Like he's got a 15-year window to be a baseball player and to make money and try to be successful. And I think when he's there, I think he does it all the right way. I think he wants to win. I think he has all of those things, but the reality for him is in 10 years or so, he's going to move back to Nashville and that's where his life's going to be. And so what does it matter to him if he spends, you know, 7 of those years in Boston and 1 of them in LA and 5 in Chicago or whatever? Like this is all just a window when he's working. And so I just think he looks at it in a very practical way. I never got the sense that he disliked playing in Boston. I don't think that's the case. I just think it's the reality of the way, the contracts are in baseball. And for some guys, like if you're Xander Bogaerts, who's more of kind of probably maybe more of a homebody guy whose home is so far away, you know, maybe he wanted the idea of the security and the stability. And so he signs the extension and stays here. And that's just his personality. I think that Mookie just takes a different approach to it, where the stability and stuff is not that valuable to him. He would rather just maximize on the other end and take a shot on the open market. You know, either one is a perfectly logical way to go about it. It's just a matter of what your priority is. And I think if you're, priority is to eventually settle into Nashville, Tennessee and raise a family there, then it makes more sense to in the meantime, maximize your earning potential while you have it.
Yeah, I never blame a player for trying to get the most money. That's what they're there to do. And just like owners are trying to sign players for the least amount of money. It's a business.
Yeah. I don't blame them for doing either one. Like I think both things make sense depending on what you want to do. You know, I mean, you know, Xander chose not to hit the open market and sign an extension into it. That's also perfectly, that makes sense. Like it's not, I just don't think it's, these guys are all making personal decisions. And so it's, I don't think it's anything you know, against Boston, or if a, you know, a play, if Aaron Judge ends up becoming a free agent, I don't think that will be because he hates New York. It's just these guys are making choices for their lives, and this is the way it works.
Oh, it's going to be a sad day when they have to tear out the Judge's chambers if he leaves in free agency.
Yeah, that's true. That would be weird.
So what percentage of Red Sox fans do you think were upset to see David Price traded?
Boy, it's so hard to say. I would just to see him traded probably low.
Yeah.
But it also came with this like reality of now your rotation is what it is. So I think there was some practical side of it too, you know, like even if fans were not that sad to see him go. I think just the logical side of it is you looked at your rotation and went, well, now what? Mm-hmm. Ryan Weber's our fifth starter? You know, it was like, so I think there was a practical side to losing him where I think fans went like, all right, first off, you're mad that there's just generally discontent because the Red Sox just traded Mookie Betts. But also from a very practical side, you've also traded David Price and you didn't replace him in the rotation. So now we're screwed there. And so I think there was frustration with that. So it might not have been necessarily a disappointment to trade David Price, but just logically you needed another starter, and that was David Price, and now he's gone.
What do you think of the return they ended up getting? So Verdugo, Jeter Downs, and yeah. Connor Wong. But then there was this whole restructuring of it because the original trade had the guy from Minnesota, Getterall, and he had medical issues. Yeah. So it just seemed like a big cluster. The entire thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think if you look at, you know, you look at what the Cardinals got when they traded Goldschmidt, or what the Diamondbacks got when they traded Goldschmidt. I mean, it falls basically in line with what teams are getting for a 1 year rental. I don't think it was, I mean, I think those things are hard to say. You kind of have to go by what's the market going to allow. You know, I think that the initial thought because for like 2 years, people here debated whether the Red Sox should trade Mookie Betts before he becomes a free agent. But so much of that was like, let's trade him and get Eloy Jimenez. It's like, well, that's never going to happen. Like,
right.
I get why that's the thought is with maybe this, you know, arguably the second best all around player in baseball, you should be able to trade him to get like one of the elite young players, but teams just don't work that way anymore. Not the way they're going about it. So
think about it from the White Sox perspective. Why would they do
that? Totally. Why in the world would you do that? Yeah. So now the Yankees maybe ruined it for everybody by getting Gleyber Torres for like 2 months of Aroldis Chapman.
Circumstances. The Cubs.
Yeah.
We're never going to see that again where a team is so desperate to win. So
I agree.
Listen,
I agree.
Every
it's
Yankees
the one,
fan
that everyone points to, they go, well, if the Yankees could get Gleyber, I'm like, okay, show me a team that can break a 100-year curse and is desperate enough to do it. Like it's a totally different scenario.
The stars aligned for the Yankees rebuild.
It's part of why I thought the Red Sox should hold off and trade Mookie at the trade deadline. Wait until maybe I'm totally wrong. I could be completely reading the market wrong and you're taking a risk on maybe Mookie gets hurt or has a bad year or whatever. But my thought was wait till the trade deadline and find that team that is like now can really smell a championship and needs that one huge piece to put them over the top. You know, maybe the value is even higher then.
Yeah. I look at the Manny Machado trade.
Right. Yeah. True.
Because that's a similar instance. Manny Machado was not as good as Mookie Betts, but one of the best players in baseball, especially leading up to his last days in Baltimore. And the Orioles didn't really get that much from the Dodgers.
Yeah, you're right. Totally fair point.
I would say the Red Sox got a better package than the Orioles got from the Dodgers.
Yeah. I also you're always looking for like what's the market there, right? Like it's all about need and you know, you needed everything to line up right.
Which, like I just said, the Yankees stars aligned for the Gleyber Torres trade.
Totally. Yep.
Maybe it would have worked out that way for the Red Sox, but chances are it wouldn't have.
Right. And so I think too, that's part of where, you know, those of us that are sort of outside observers on it, it's hard to say, you know, the question was like, what do you think of the return? And the reality is like, I just think it's almost impossible for us to know because you know, even having been like a little bit of, you know, talking to people when they were negotiating back and forth with the Dodgers and the Padres and having some sense of players around the table, it's hard to say like what, you know, I mean, could they have done significantly better than this if they've waited? Could they, was there some team out there willing to give up a much bigger package? I mean, the fact that they waited until the very end of the offseason tells you that they tried basically every avenue to see what the best deal out there was, and this is what they could get. It seems like a good, I mean, it's a, not a bad group. I mean, you know, Verdugo certainly could be an everyday right fielder. Jeter Downs, almost universally, people think is a starting middle infielder. Connor Wong is a catcher, and that's something that the Red Sox had absolutely nothing at catcher, and they clear a bunch of salary. I mean, there's considerable upside there, but I don't know how you put a value on 1 year of Mookie Betts. You know, like, is that worth losing that year and also just signaling to your fan base where that this is the direction we're going? I don't know. It's the kind of trade where even the guys in the organization who can kind of justify it and talk about it and can say, like, well, here's why we did it, and here's what we saw, and here's why we like these guys, and here's our reality and of the financials of it, and all that, you know, they can explain the whole logic behind it, and they might even agree with the logic behind it, and none of them is happy about it. You know what I mean? It's just, it's not a trade that you make and then feel good about afterward, even if you think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. All right, let's move to 2020. So I don't want to call this breaking news because we all knew the news was coming. Chris Sale needs Tommy John surgery. And he decided yesterday. It's a good thing we actually had to delay, because had we recorded,
I was actually just thinking that, yeah,
Thursday morning.
Yeah, we almost did this yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, had we recorded Thursday morning, we wouldn't have had the Sale news. But that, so I was thinking the delay in the season was going to help the Red Sox, because Chris Sale was already going to have injury issues. The team sort of is recovering from the Mookie Betts trade thing we all just talked about. Verdugo was going to start the season injured. So I thought a delay in the season was going to help the Red Sox, but I don't know, maybe that's out the window now with Sale officially out.
Yes. I mean, well, I mean, it still helps them with Verdugo, I guess, a little bit.
But without Sale, I don't know how much of a contender they can really be.
Oh yeah. No, I totally agree. Yeah. No, I mean, this was also part of the reasoning behind that. One person told me part of the reasoning behind going ahead and trading Mookie right now is take Mookie Betts out of the lineup, replace him with Alex Verdugo. That's still probably a good enough lineup to contend, right? I mean, you know, you still have
Martinez, Betts, Bogarts,
Benintendi. Yeah. I mean, it's and a couple of, you know, decent bats in AAA who maybe could come up and help. It's just, it's still a legitimate, perfectly legitimate contending lineup. But this team was always going to be a crapshoot of starting pitching. It was, you know, can Nathan Eovaldi stay healthy? Can Eduardo Rodriguez repeat last season? And is Chris Sale going to avoid Tommy John? Those risks were going to be there whether Mookie Betts was here or not. And if Mookie couldn't help in that factor, then maybe this was a year to go ahead and trade him, because you're rolling the dice anyway, you know. I mean, if Sale had stayed healthy and pitched the way Chris Sale can be, then, you know, okay, if Sale is your number one, maybe if Eovaldi stays healthy, that's a pretty good 2-3 in the rotation. You could see where maybe it could work. But no, without Sale, I think that now you really need a lot of things to come together. And I think that realistically, the Red Sox know that they're rolling a dice here that probably won't work. And, you know, maybe that's not that bad of a thing, right? I mean, that happens sometimes. That's the way it goes. Every team seems to, like, kind of go through ebbs and flows. But no, I don't think that it's possible now to look at the season and think, oh, the Red Sox are in a good position. You know, I mean, this is twice now that Heim Bloom's had they had one press conference about the Mookie trade and then a conference call yesterday about Chris Sale. And both times he was having to admit something just happened that made us worse. You know, it was not something he could spin as, well, it's just an opportunity for somebody to step up. But, you know, he can say that sort of stuff. But both times he just flat out admitted, yes, we are worse today than we were yesterday.
But you know what? And that's the right course of action to take, because everyone knows you're just full of shit if you say the other thing.
Completely. Yeah. There was no good way to try to, you know, we always say that, like, that people will say, like, well, there's no way to sugarcoat this, but, you know, it's a great opportunity for our young guys. Like, well, you're trying to sugarcoat it, but it's just not working.
Just please don't.
No, they don't know. They're clearly in a worse position. I can't, to me, the only way then for this to work is if, you know, Evaldi finally is that top of the rotation guy that it seems like he's had the potential to be his whole career, but never has been. If Eduardo is another guy who, again, can give you 200 innings and win 20 games, and if one of the pitching guys who didn't even make – one of the pitching prospects who didn't make the opening day roster somehow emerges as a legitimate standout number three type starter. Otherwise, I mean, it's just hard to see how it can possibly all play out and you hit, you know, the best-case scenario on every single thing to make this into a particularly strong season.
Yeah, you mentioned Eduardo Rodriguez. He had a career year last year, and so did Rafael Devers. So is the plan – do you think the plan now is, okay, 2020 is going to be weird and already a loss just from the Sale injury. Let's regroup for 2021, try and get some more prospects in the system, because I believe I saw Jason Stark ranked the Red Sox system bottom five in baseball. So not only is – the major league team injured, but the system doesn't have a ton to replenish it.
Yeah. I think the system's gotten better. I think Baseball America had them somewhere like 20th or something like that.
Okay.
It's not a standout system. It's much deeper than it was a year or two ago, but, cause they had a really good, 2018 draft, at least the early returns on it have been really good. So that's helped them, but no, it's not a, you know, Padres farm system or anything, certainly not at that, but I do think ultimately that's where you end up. You know, Jackie Bradley Jr. is in his last year before free agency. You could see him having some considerable value at the trade deadline. Brandon Workman's in his last year before free agency. If he comes in and has another year in the ninth inning like he had last season, you could see him having considerable value. You know, Matt Barnes, I think there are guys they could trade. Even a guy like Benintendi or Verdugo, I mean, those two are kind of redundant right now, right? I mean, they seem like really similar players.
Yeah.
They're very similar offensive profiles. And so, you know, if you wanted to and, you know, try to swap out one of those guys to fill a different need elsewhere, I think that's a totally viable, you know, idea of a way to go. So, yeah, I think that I could see them continuing to make moves late in the year and try to just regroup and rebuild for 2021. You know, I think that you have Devers and Bogarts as your, you know, the new core that you build around. That would be my expectation. And maybe Eduardo, if they can get him signed to an extension or something at some point here. But I do think that at some point we're going to see more moves, with the hope being that they can pull off, frankly, what Cashman did several years ago with the Beltran and Andrew Miller, and that's the year he traded Chapman, right? And,
yeah.
You know, when he had that big fire sale.
2016.
He nailed it. You know, I mean, that was like kind of how many times had Brian Cashman been able to just really sell off assets at the deadline? And when he did, he got it right. And that let them to, you know, pretty quickly turn around and become an elite team again.
No, the Yankees rebuild took 2 months.
For the Red Sox. Yeah.
No, right. Like I say it jokingly, but it legitimately took 2 months.
Right.
So.
Yes, I think to me it's one of like the Cashman's finest hours. It was when you, to me, I felt like it was when Cashman went from the guy who just spends George Steinbrenner's money to a guy who really showed like he could build a team in his own way and his own terms, and I think that's made him, you know, he was really successful with that, and. And I think that's going to be the challenge for this team now. How do you do a pretty drastic rebuild where all you've lost is, you know, basically 1 year or even arguably just kind of a half year? You know, you were contenders for a while and then, you know, you give up at the end of a season and you're right back in it.
So last question before we go, it's sort of something I've been talking to a lot of different people about as we've been doing our AL East previews. It's going to be a weird season. Maybe a half a season is what we're looking at, late June or July. Would you like to see baseball try anything different with the schedule or the playoff format? Just because use this as an opportunity to test some things.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't really thought about that. I mean, maybe. I guess it depends on just how much of a season do they have left. You know, if this thing turns into, like, you've got 2 months to play, then sure, I could see, you know, play 2 months and, like, half the league gets in to the playoffs, and let's see what that looks like. I think something like that could be interesting, but I also don't know. You know, there's so much of this that's so uncertain, and we just have no idea what's coming next. But to me, it is pretty hard to think ahead and figure out what's coming.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm expecting between 80 and 100 games as, like, best case scenario at this point, because even when things get the all clear for big social gatherings again, players are going to have to go back to spring training and get their workouts back in.
Yeah, it was interesting yesterday on the Chris Sale conference call. We were asking how are the Red Sox preparing their pitchers, and they said what they've done is they've told all of their starters to basically stay on an every fifth day schedule, throwing 2 innings at a time. So get up, throw like 20 pitches, sit, and throw another 15 or so. And they want their guys to just stay right there. Stay stretched out for 2 innings, because their belief is then if they get a 3-week buildup into the regular season, if all their starters are already at 2 innings, 3 weeks gives them enough time to get them where they could start the season reasonably stretched out.
That's interesting.
So they're kind of preparing for a 3-week spring training buildup, and if they get a 4th week, that's a bonus.
What did the most of the Red Sox players do? Did they end up going back home?
Yeah, most of them now have gone home. I think they told us that there were either like 7 or 8 guys were at the complex yesterday. But I think it seems like that's what the Yankees deal. Like, they initially all voted to stay, right? And then everybody went home.
Yeah, I think they voted to stay, and then that was when a lot of people thought maybe it would only be 2 to 4 week delay, and then everyone realized it's going to be months. And what are you going to do? How long are you going to stay in Tampa and work out for?
Right. Yeah. I mean, these guys, especially the guys who have families and stuff, I mean, they don't want to, you know, how long can you stay away from all that, you know, or keep your family, you know, staying in a, you know, a condo in Tampa.
Right.
It's hard. So I think it was the right thing. I mean, I think it was inevitable now we look at it all and go like, well, this was inevitable. Like, obviously everything was going to have to shut down and everybody was going to have to go home. But I mean, I was still in Florida as of 8 days ago.
Things changed so quickly. It's amazing how things change so
thoroughly.
Fast.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. I mean, you know, now I've been back home for about a week and I haven't really left the house except for one day walking around, you know, going outside, some of my kids. But yeah, it has changed in such a drastic and significant way. And yeah, I think now we're all settling into the idea that this is what it's going to be for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really bizarre. And like we said at the top, you know, people are dealing with more serious issues, but hopefully people can read you in The Athletic, listen to, you know, this podcast or whatever it is, and just get a little bit of enjoyment talking about baseball. Definitely appreciate it, Chad. You guys can follow him on Twitter at ChadJennings22. You probably are already following him because he used to cover the Yankees. Chad, I appreciate the time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.